Chapter 10. Looking for Truth at the Tantra Center, Diabetes and a Delusional Tantrum. While Steve was futilely looking for spiritual sustenance and a mentor of sorts, he finally went to the Tantra Yoga Center. He wasn't attached to Tantra for any sexually explicit or exploitative reason, except that he loved Maria and felt it was their religious unification he wanted to reflect on and develop. Their relationship embodied a real affinity for one another, but it was an unanalyzed kind of love. As he approached the building, however, his dark fears haunted him. He was afraid of sexual rejection from Maria, and he was looking for spiritual catharsis from her after he had had that painful flashback. When he entered the center, he was in a near trance. He pondered whether life and death really were a bardo state, as the Tibetan Book of the Dead puts forth. He wondered if humans shuffle between polarities of love and hate, wrath and compassion, just like the after-death state. Was life just a limited, manipulated dream? He felt split in half, almost schizophrenic, like fighting between manic ecstasy and depressive trauma. He fixated on the theory that if male and female were opposite, either one could be the opposite of good, like shadow opposed to night or light to dark. He didn't like to think that either male or female was more evil than the other. He was more furtive and darker than Maria, but in no way did he feel evil. And Maria was no guiltier of sin than a little kitten. He walked up to the front desk of the Tantra Center and asked if he could see the guru in charge. The young woman looked at him appraisingly before answering. "I'm sorry, he only sees select people." She tore off a pink sheet of message paper and pushed it toward him. "You can leave your name. Perhaps he'll call you back." She looked doubtful, however, as she nodded toward the pen chained to the counter. "If not, you can try back in a few days." Steve found her and others there, deferring and standoffish. He felt his anima rise because this was the story of his life, always being redirected to someone else. The secretary's unreceptiveness made him feel hostile. He couldn't explain why his primal emotion was welling up in him. He figured he needed a sip from the well of knowledge and to learn lessons he and Maria, too, hadn't yet been taught. Steve returned three more times, and each time his request to see the guru was refused. He was finally referred to the same priest he'd met when he had the last flashback. During this time, he was beginning to feel less stable and oddly disoriented. He also was feeling desperate and aggressive. He thought that the guru at the Tantra Center was thumbing his nose at Steve, which made him feel very small. He'd always felt overwhelmed by most of the outside world and didn't know where his place was. The guru's negligence only intensified these feelings. The fear that he might have another flashback haunted him. He also felt tired and thirsty all the time. He drank a lot of liquids, especially sugar drinks, and was urinating a lot. Maria said, "You should see the doctor. You don't seem to have any mental illness, although I could be wrong. Maybe it's a mixture of things." "I'll go to the free clinic right now," Steve replied impulsively. He couldn't effectively analyze his situation, but going to the clinic seemed the easiest option. Once there, he struggled to describe his situation to the doctor. It all seemed so vague to Steve. "From what you tell me," the doctor said, "I'd like to test your glucose level for diabetes. Is that all right?" Steve nodded. After the test, Steve was called back into the examining room. "Your blood sugar is fairly high," the doctor said, "which may be why you feel so drained all the time. Have you ever had any problems with your liver?" "When I was a baby, I had a severe case of hepatitis, the type that you catch from dirty towels and things, not needles, and basically goes away after you get it. I had it pretty bad. My mother didn't get it treated, and it almost ruined my liver." The doctor nodded. "I'll have to give you insulin until we obtain results for your liver to see if you can tolerate tablets. The tabs I want to give you require a healthy liver. For now, we'll have to settle for an injection." Steve was silent while the doctor consulted his file. "You might be a mild dual diagnosis. That means you might need to be treated for mental illness, which you seem to self-medicate with street drugs. Unfortunately, the psychiatrist is on vacation, so you will have to come back on Monday to see him. We'll have your blood test at that time, which will determine if your liver is healthy. We'll also get a better idea of your blood sugar level." Steve was terrified of shots, but took the insulin injection without complaint. Within an hour, he felt like a new man, but was going between poles of reason. He wondered whether he could tolerate daily insulin injections, forgetting that the doctor would put him on insulin as an ultimatum. When he returned home, Steve tried to paraphrase what the doctor had said. He was unable to view the doctor's analysis in any way but his own slanted perspective because of his fear of needles and mental illness. He stated flatly to Maria, "They think I might have to take insulin, and they want to check me for mental illness in a follow-up. I do feel much better with the insulin, but I don't know whether I can handle injecting myself every day. They say I might not be able to take the pill treatment because of my liver." He took a shaky breath. "They said I have mental illness. Isn't that a hoot?" "You should try to follow up, Steve. It sounds like they are helping you," said Maria, knowing she should convince him to go back. However, she thought there was really nothing wrong with him except that, like her, he needed to lay off the drugs. She was like the partner who didn't want to cause her lover any undue pain, but was more like the mother who spoils the child and herself. "I'll go back, Maria," he replied with visible effort. In the back of his mind, however, he deliberated about postponing the visit and rationalized that he only felt better because he wanted to feel better. After a week's delay, Steve still hadn't seen the doctor. Slowly he became tired and dysfunctional all over again until he was on the verge of another flashback. He'd also resumed frequently urinating. In a half-dreamlike state, he wondered whether this was because of high blood sugar. He desperately needed somebody to guide him and tell him what to do. In his desperation, he thought that if he only found God or woke up to life, everything would be all right. It was a partial truth, but not entirely realistic. He decided to try the Tantra guru one more time. He believed that the guru was aloof and wouldn't talk to him because he wanted to preserve his erectness. En route to the Tantra center, Steve experienced another flashback. He experienced dementia and heard voices. He was unable to control the primal violent thoughts that flickered through his mind. The devilish voices in his head kindled sparks of paranoia in his heart. Like Saul in the Bible, Steve had been struck by lightning, but it was psychic rather than real lightning. Steve had retreated into a shadow world. It was as if he had been psychically clubbed from behind. This was the premonition of doom the voices had warned him of before. He was terrified to the breaking point. He had opened a door to an alien world where he was controlled by violence. He wanted to threaten the guru in some way because he thought that for some reason the guru was a threat to him. Steve's aggressiveness manifested itself in impish ways rather than in a hostile manner. It was a monkey-see, monkey-do situation. He wanted to mimic violence. He tried to control himself. He was almost unaware of his unhealthy fascination with these traumatic predilections. He didn't consider what would happen if he acted on them as the prophecy had indicated. It had never entered his mind that there would be serious consequences to pay if he physically threatened another person, as the voices suggested he do. He walked into the Tantra Center, struggling to remain calm and under control. At the front desk, he asked once again to see the guru. The secretary explained that she feared asking again and that she would not contact the guru again. He had a dizzy look on his face and he said he wanted to sit down. His easygoing, simple Picasso-like countenance had changed to frozen fright. In the front room, he looked at a clay statue of some figures in Yab Yum. It was 3 or 4 feet tall. The female figure reminded him of Maria and the male figure reminded him of the guru. As he gazed at it, the statue became animated and the figures seemed to move as if they were really kissing. The voices in his head started again. One voice said, "Hit that guru. He's a womanizer and a manipulator." A devilish whisperer echoing Steve's id obscenely insinuated that the guru was after Maria. He stalked toward the hallway, intending to enter the guru's room to hit him. He imagined the punches falling on the flesh of the other man's face and it inflamed him. But as he passed the statue, he stopped himself. He reached for a small Yab Yum figure and hurled the image to the floor. "Maria's not your teddy bear, she's mine!" He was stricken by psychic ghosts who wanted to condemn him. He couldn't understand the ordinary humdrum ways of the world around him, and he felt like a hypocrite reacting the way he did. He was a spiritual person, but instead of coping with life issues and adapting to society, he dealt with life by associating with drug dealers and other lowlifes. And now he was becoming violent. Two very large young men appeared in the room and quickly wrestled into the ground. Steve fought back ferociously. The police soon followed and he was subdued and taken to a hospital. The prophecy that Steve had received had finally materialized. The specter had come like a thief in the night. Perhaps he had prophesied his own downfall. Perhaps it was a diabetic shock, and perhaps it was also mental illness.